KPCW News Time now is 8:11. Good morning, I'm Leslie Thatcher. Well, with the resignation of Interim Planning Director Kayla Sintz, Park City Manager Diane Foster has hired Bruce Erickson to serve on an interim basis. As the city continues its search for a community development director, Bruce Erickson joins me now in the studio. Good morning, Bruce.
Good morning, Leslie.
So, you can tell us a little bit about yourself. I know you're a resort planner. You served on the Planning Commission for longer than most prison terms.
Yeah, I served on the Planning Commission for 16 years here. And then I had an opportunity to do some stuff with the Historic District Commission. And my main work is in the private sector, and I think over the course of time, I've probably seen 30 or 40 different planning commissions in a dozen or better jurisdictions across the country. So I am a professional. I have a license in planning. That makes me a bit of a geek. And, I think this is a good time to come in and just kind of do what we would do in the private sector, kind of cover off a staff change and make sure there's good continuity.
Yeah, so you're working for yourself now, so you have the time to take this on? Or?
Right, I have my own company, Four Mountain Advisors, and we do work for ski areas across the country and in Scandinavia. And we also do some work for some of the water quality agencies at high altitude, some ecological work. And we do some work for mainly counties. Last year I worked for Daggett County as a consultant to work on their general plan and their public lands initiative. 2 years or almost 3 years ago now, I wrote the wind turbine ordinance for Tooele County to make sure they knew where, if they were going to get wind turbine generators on in the county, how do we mitigate those impacts. And I do some work for the Forest Service.
All right. So why did you want to take this on?
Well, there's a quote from an old movie that I thought I'd bring up, but it's something about I was waiting for a mission, and for my sins they gave me one, which is out of early Apocalypse Now. But honestly, Matt and Mark Harrington came to me and said, Bruce, do you want to help us out here and do a normal transition and kind of keep an eye on things for us while we look for the right person to fill in the gap? And I said yes.
All right. So the contract is for how long?
The contract runs for 90 days. It's extendable.
Okay. And that's really, it's just to get the community development director hired? And
right. You know, Kayla did a good job, and the staff is up there working away just as hard and fast as they can. And planning is a bit of a difficult profession in that the planner's work generally is judged by the public, who kind of has their own opinions. And it's really hard to ultimately see what the end result of your work is. It may take 10 or 15 years to see the results of a general plan or a zoning code change. And that's difficult to get a reward out of if you're sitting there every single day. So we're going to talk through some of these things, and we're going to try and clarify some of our procedures to help out.
So as you look around town, are you happy with what you did?
Well, first of all, I can point out every single mistake I made on the Planning Commission.
Give me the biggest one.
I wouldn't dare. I may down the road, Leslie, but I wouldn't dare now because it's probably somebody's building or somebody else's idea. I think what we're going to do, you know, over the course of the last year, I've tried to stay out of city politics because I do this for a living, but I think we need to kind of help the public sort out the difference between what it is we want to do and then deal with the how we're going to do it. And so all these really technical code changes and zoning ordinance changes and all those things kind of need to slip into the background a little bit while we debate what it is we want to do. And that's what it is we want to do.
All right, and that's what we're going through, the kind of this
right, that's
exercise.
One. That's one of my tasks here is to kind of do what I can from an outside perspective to streamline the process, do a good job of getting out there with the public, talking to them on a general, regular basis, helping them understand the issues that we're facing and kind of talk about what it is we really want to do.
So it's more than just trying to keep projects on task up on the third floor or something.
Well, yeah. I mean, that's part of what Diane wants and the city council wants me to do is take advantage of being an old man and saying, here's kind of the lessons I've learned from the Forest Service and the lessons I'm learning from other jurisdictions. Impart those lessons and deliver a smoothly running operation when the community development director arrives.
So have you applied for that position?
No, I haven't, Leslie.
And have no interest in it? Or?
Well, I'll never say never. I mean, it could be $1 million and I'll get a house in Old Town. But, the community development director is a different position than a planning director. They have some larger managerial issues to face. They face some public works issues. They face some capital improvement issues. It's a different skill set.
All right. So have you done a lot of work for your business here in town, or has it mostly been outside of Park City?
Well, first of all, let me compliment the city staff. They really went out of their way to prevent conflicts of interest with my work. Here in the city, the only work I normally do is work for the ski resorts. So Park City Mountain Resort, Canyons in the county. Now with Vail in place, the city has set up a methodology where I don't get involved at all. So that the issues with Vail and the things they're talking about with Vail resorts, that doesn't come through me. But mainly my work has been on the ski areas.
All right, because that's what my question was going to be, given the work you have done in town and had to create some conflicts, but that's been resolved?
Yeah, and amazingly so. I was, Matt and Mark Harrington have, I think, gone out of their way to make sure the issues with the resorts directly are not a conflict of interest, because I won't deal with them, and I'm not dealing with the RDA in Lower Park Avenue.
Right, and again, I was going to ask, the city actually hired another planner from West Valley City to work one day a week,
right,
given your support, being the spokesperson for the seniors, huh?
Right. Well, yeah, and I am a partial senior, but I look forward to working with Nicole on these things, and there's going to be some overlap with the underlying zoning in the RDA and the efforts of the RDA to do some neighborhood improvements. My job with some of the senior ladies is just to try and sort out planner speak and current social pressures to what they're used to dealing with. Most of the folks I talk to don't even use computers, and the folks that are doing the planning live and die by their mobile phones. So there's a disconnect, and we're just going to work through that.
So did you sit through yesterday's presentation to the city council from the Lower Park Avenue?
No, I did not.
Design studio?
No, I did not.
Because you have to remove yourself?
Well, one is, part of my job is to kind of let the process roll as it does and monitor. And I think that's the right management style for this particular team. We've got some really good people. We're just going to kind of monitor for the outcomes and make sure that we're getting the outcome we really want. And there's some other things we'll talk about down the road, like the difference between resiliency and mitigation strategies and the ability to adapt. Most of the transportation planning we see going on is not necessarily planning, but mitigation strategy. And mitigation strategy isn't necessarily sustainable. You have to constantly monitor and you have to constantly watch mitigation. Whereas adaptability or limits on certain things, you don't necessarily have to monitor that hard. So the more we see good things built into a project proposal rather than doing mitigation strategies coming out the other side, the better off we are over the long run.
Basically, the mitigation is the Band-Aid, huh?
Mitigation is a Band-Aid. Sometimes they're long-term Band-Aids, but yeah.
Okay. All right. Anything else you wanted to say?
Well, the only other thing I wanted to say, Leslie, is that I heard me on the radio earlier this morning talking about the Coles, and the secret between you and me is that I really am a good public speaker, except when I'm speaking about things that are personal to me. And so that'll be the secret. If you hear my voice crack when I'm talking, that means I really care and I'm not being professional. So I apologize to the rest of the folks out there, but I look forward to doing this job. Stop me on the street. That's important.
You start when next week?
Tuesday morning.
21st?
Yes.
Okay. Well, good luck.
Thank you.
Bruce, thanks. That's Bruce Erickson, who has been named as Park City Interim Planning Director. News time, 8:20.
Additional support for programming on KPCW is provided by Bird and Barley, chicken, ribs, beer on Bonanza Drive, birdandbarley.com, Peterson Calder Real Estate, Berkshire Hathaway, selling Park City since 1989, experienceparkcity.com, Sean Potter, Wills Estate Planning and Probate Administration, wasatchwillsandtrusts.com, 435-647-5951, and Done to Your Taste Catering, 16 years perfecting life's celebrations, the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and listeners like you.
KPCW News Time now, 8:21. Good morning, I'm Leslie Thatcher. In the studio with me now, Charlie Sturgis, Mountain Trails Foundation, with our trail report. So, what's going on?
Good morning. We got great weather, killer trails, low bugs. intermittent rains, which is making it really nice, keeping the dust way down. Things are good. So let's just start off with the most obvious part of the trail report is what's going on somewhere along the mid-mountain world, specifically between Spiro and Armstrong. First off, everything is open for the weekend, including Pinecone. We will see a short closure somewhere along the line, once again on Pinecone, I believe. I don't know that they did that work, but I'm sure they're listening. I'll find out soon. So be it. But they will have some intermittent flying going on. They will be flying towers in on Monday. You can expect some very, very, very short closures. So really, they'll have some trail folks out there telling you to hold up for a minute. Be nice. Not everybody has been as nice as they could. And I know it's always frustrating, but you know, we're really talking 5-10 minute, I think, type of hold-ups. So just relax. Enjoy being out there. Otherwise, trails are in great shape. If you haven't gone up and experienced the new Mid-Mountain Extension, well worth taking a look at. It's also another way to extend or do a different loop. So if you're typically riding Armstrong and Mid-Mountain and that kind of stuff and you want to do something a little different, Jenny's to Deer Valley to the extension over the Regis Snowtop, maybe all the way down into Skid Row. Great loop. So, be creative. We have a lot of mileage out there.
Yeah. So, I mean, is it new just because, I mean, it's felt unfinished, I guess. Is that just
all new trail
back in and
all
and
new trails
clean
are
it
like
up,
that?
Or?
Let's see. And I think Deer Valley still plans on coming in and doing some more finish work. I'm sure it's just a matter of allocating some time. If we get a good volunteer group, we'll run them up there as well. But even, you know, I rode after riding Mid-Mountain, the new Mid-Mountain the other day, the reroute. You know, you look at what a month's worth of riding's done on it. It's pretty incredible. And give it a winner and a chance for things to grow back in and get the line defined. True of the reroute and also of the extension. Those things, all those little things will kind of go away. Did you bring my tools in that were sitting out there? Did you?
Oh,
there was a pair. There was a set of tools. I didn't grab them either. Anyhow, a couple other things, though, really important. You know, there's been a lot of talk and conversation going on the last few months. Some of it's stimulated by the extent, by the reroute and just, some other reroutes we've done, you know, as the trail's gotten older, the Spiro situation. So this Wednesday for the Mountain Life Show, we are going to be doing a call-in talk opportunity, which should be really a lot of fun. And the goal is to help people become better informed. We certainly want to hear questions about concerns or things that you are happy about, too. You know, that's always good to hear about the happy stuff. But we really want to hear from folks. So between 9 and 10 o'clock is the Mountain Life Show.
And we should note that, I mean, it'll be you and then it'll be
Bob Racky.
Okay.
And I think we're trying to get either Mike Abel or Rich Cook from IMBA at least to call in and talk a little bit about what their experience is, you know, across the country.
And then Lynn and Tim,
and
who
Lynn
are both
Tim.
Board members, though, of Mountain Trails,
members, yes.
Though. So we've kind of got like a little, okay.
You're further ahead than I am on the hit list of who's going to be there. But anyhow, it should be fun. You know, we've done this before. I think it gives a chance for people to find out more about what's going on and maybe more about the nuances of all the things that it takes to actually have the trail system that we have here. So that'll be pretty cool. Last thing on my list as we're going into race season, the Jupiter Peak Steeplechase, first thing coming up August 1st, like 2 weeks away. If you're thinking about doing it, even hesitating to do it, you know, sign up. Get in there and sign up. It helps us with our planning. August 15th is the half marathon, the new half marathon, so it's not an out and back anymore. It's a loop with a 5K race as well for your kids and other visitors who might want to do it. So these races are really important to Mountain Trails. Please just get in there and sign it up because it does help us a lot with planning and not having any waste that's involved with the races themselves.
Okay. Anything else?
You know, Leslie, I think it's killer out there. Also, enjoy the Uintas. The Uintas have been great. It's almost no bugs. I've been blown away.
Great. Charlie.
All right.
Thanks,
Leslie.
It's Charlie Sturgis with Mountain Trails Foundation. News time, 8:25.
This Mountain Trails Report is brought to you in part by Colesport, U.S. Bank, Vail Resort Epic Promise, reminding you to practice 10 seconds of kindness. Slow down, smile, be safe. Namaste, Park City.
This is Chris Wissner, store manager of Jan's, a longtime supporter of KPCW. Jan's guides fly fishing excursions to local waters and private ranches. Our fly shop is stocked with the gear you need, and our guides are ready to take you to the river. Serving Park City for over 30 years, Jan's Mountain Recreation Experts. 649-4949 or jans.com.
8:26 now. Good morning. Still to come, we'll be talking with Park City Council Member Tim Henney. Later on in the hour, it's Cassandra Lemons and with the National Ability Center and Amy McDonald, the Education Director at Kimball Arts Center, telling us more about a summer camp aimed at teaching art to disabled youth. Stay tuned.
This is Chris Robinson with Berkshire Hathaway Home Services, Utah Properties. KPCW is one of the many nonprofits our agents and companies support. They are the backbone of Summit and Wasatch counties in our incredible community. More info at bhhsutah.com.
KPCW News Time now, 8:26. Good morning, I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's the local news hour here on KPCW. Well, the Park City Council last night directing staff to move forward with a utility mitigation surcharge program, then return with specifics, having the potential to reduce the municipal footprint by more than 60%. In the studio with me, I have Park City Council Member Tim Henney. Good morning.
Morning, Leslie.
So are we trying to save energy or just trying to use cleaner energy here and reduce kind of the coal, you know, powered energy sources that we've got?
It's not a use cleaner energy per se, like it's not a blue sky program. By creating efficiencies, we would try to do that through cleaner energy than the coal that we're currently using through Rocky Mountain Power. So it's two-pronged. It's to reduce our reliance on energy that's extremely dirty, and it's also to try to factor in the social costs of the energy that we use, which is extremely dirty.
Yeah. So how much are we talking about, this surcharge?
We don't know yet. Yeah, that's part of the question of going back and fleshing this whole thing out, and that's what staff's going to be working on. They're going to come back with a proposal, and we'll take a look at it.
Okay, and the idea is then is that the surcharge would go into some kind of fund, and from that fund, the city would do what?
Create efficiencies within our existing water system.
Are we talking just water systems?
We're talking just water systems.
Yeah. And this is on top of any surcharge that you're going to get from people
for pumping
who live above 6,900 feet.
Exactly. Yeah, that's a rate charge that takes into account the actual cost that we're charged by Rocky Mountain Power, but it doesn't take into account the social costs. And this is kind of a bigger, you know, picture and concept. We in our country, we tend to subsidize and create loopholes for a lot of vested interests that have been around for a long time, and that's the way we've done business. That's part of our capitalist system, which is one of the dark sides of capitalism. And what we're trying to do and be progressive as a community is say, you know, we use this energy form, which is coal, which has high social costs, and it is unaccounted for. Not only that, there's subsidies involved, and there's some really, you know, insidious subsidies like highways that are built to handle the weight of coal trucks, and we all as taxpayers pay into those federal tax dollars that are subsidizing haulers of coal.
So we would see the surcharge then on our water bills? That's how it would work?
We would see it on our water bills, yes.
Yeah. Got to ask, though, why would we want to support the city spending more money on so-called energy-efficient projects just so it can go out and then build projects that double their energy use, i.e. the MARC, you know, where the power bill doubled because we installed air conditioning there?
You mean the MARC or
the MARC?
Well, you know,
if people don't want to sweat, then don't work out. I mean, we say it's, you know, it's the level of service, but really, I mean, we're talking about people working out and sweating, and now they would need to be air conditioned.
My answer to that would be, you know, council tries to look at what we believe is the majority view of the community, right? We reflect what the community creates as a vision and goals, and that's where the priorities come from. That's where the budgeting comes from. That's where our energy and our time and resources go. So when the community said it's important, and enough of the community said that that is important, and I wasn't part of that discussion on the MARC, but my understanding is there was significant discussion on air conditioning the MARC. There was significant discussion of air conditioning the library building and the Jim Santee Auditorium, mm-hmm. and that the decision was that the majority of our community felt that that was important enough to spend money to put it in. And yes, that does increase our carbon footprint. And we've done things to offset that. that, like solar panels on the Mark building. And we put in millions of dollars of energy efficiency upgrades in the library building. So, you know, we're trying to balance and offset some of those increases for amenities and desires that the community says they want with these progressive measures to offset.
Yeah, but it just feels like any energy reduction that residents have made on their own behalf are overshadowed by the city's increased. And I just don't understand. It's like, why should we pay for, you know, the city building projects that double, you know, the power bill?
Well, specifically, such as?
We haven't seen the power bills from the library, but I mean, I'm sure we can expect to see what we saw at the Mark as well.
Well, they're going to, that's, you're right. I mean, it's going to be really interesting to see what happens with these energy bills because, again, we have solar panels on the MARSAC, we have solar panels on the Mark, so we have certainly offset some of that higher energy cost. It would have been much higher had we not taken those measures to offset and generate our own energy at the source.
Yeah.
So we're trying to balance that. And, you know, as long as the community says, hey, it's important to have air conditioning in the Mark, you know, we have to sort of weigh the costs and benefit and do an analysis and come to a decision. And those were the decisions made.
Yeah. And we have seen an increase in the sales tax. The city has talked about increasing its portion of the property tax. We see increased growth. We see more money coming into the city. And I guess it's hard to believe that the city doesn't have the money in its current budget to make these savings with what you already have. I mean, I don't know why we need more.
That's a great point, and we talked about that. And the timeline for executing these initiatives is going to get condensed by creating a dedicated source of funding. So that's my answer to that. It might take 15 years to put some of these measures or the majority of these measures or enough of these measures in place. We can condense that down to something more like 5 years. Now, I'm making those numbers up. That's what will come out in the work session when we follow up with the next discussion. And we're also going to have an opportunity for public input on this. This is not a done deal. But there is a lot of traction among the council members to pursue this and to go deeper, and that was the direction that we gave staff. But conceptually, I love it. I mean, I think we should be paying for the social costs of burning dirty energy.
Yeah. But we're not going to get anywhere with that argument about, I mean, who's choosing to burn that dirty energy. But
well, I mean, everybody has the choice. You know, you can build in efficiencies at your own home and try to reduce your electricity bill, which I think everybody should be doing. It makes economic sense to do that.
Many of us do try to do that. And at the same time, we're being overshadowed by what the city keeps doing.
No, the city's trying to do that also. I mean, if you looked at what our energy consumption could be had we not put in energy efficiency, you know, millions of dollars of upgrade to energy efficiencies in all the buildings and all the projects that we do. And I'm not talking about just the solar panels. That's the next level. We've done many, many levels to reduce our energy consumption, and it's still enormous. And the biggest energy generator or consumer within the city is the water department.
All right. Well, so we get this new surcharge, and taxpayers are now paying for creating these energy efficiencies. And then all of a sudden, now we're saving 60% of our energy costs. Are we going to get a refund?
No, but you're not going to see the price increases that we've talked about that are going to be necessary well into the future. So we can offset some, not all, of those future rate increases on water. And believe me, water rates are going to go higher. I mean, everybody should have that as a fundamental understanding. We have to agree on that. And if you don't agree on it, you don't have to agree on it. You don't have to like it. But let me tell you, water rates are going to go up.
Let's see. You also had a presentation from the Lower Park Avenue Design Studio, a creative think tank. You had, I think, 10 different experts.
We did.
No women, though, huh?
Yeah, I guess.
No women applied?
They
or you
didn't
don't
apply,
know?
Yeah. Yeah, we didn't have a certain criteria for gender mix, but I would have loved to have seen some women apply and be part of the process, and I don't think there was any reason that they weren't other than they didn't apply.
All right. So came up with some big ideas. What did you see that you loved?
Well, I loved, again, this is sort of the big picture. I loved the fact that we kicked off this beginning conceptualization of, again, trying to see what the community envisions for this area, which the city owns a lot of property in, which represents tremendous opportunity to create what the community wants to see there. And if that's affordable housing on the library field, and I throw that one out because we heard very clearly from the surrounding neighbors that they don't want to see that, and they were very energized and very engaged. So, you know, that's great. We got engagement. What I'd like to see is engagement shift a little bit to what we do want to see now, because we have we have as clean a slate as we can get as a city, with lots of property and a fair amount of money through the RDA, and we have now grand and audacious ideas for what could be done. So they kicked this process off by creating various scenarios and looked at all the different zones, broke it into different zones of the property that's owned, and specifically went in, you know, not all the way into the weeds, but well enough into the weeds to come up with some really interesting ideas. So that was my favorite part of it. Specifically, you know, I like the fact that they got it down to the core pillar of this whole thing is the east-west connection that goes from Miners Hospital over to the existing, but it's not vacant, it's being used by Mountain Trails Foundation, but the old fire station, and then up through the property that we just recently bought from a family in town, and all the way to Empire. So there's a corridor there that has tremendous opportunity, and it just is what we are going to do with it. And the senior center sits in that location also.
Yeah, so it's a pedestrian corridor.
It's being envisioned, mm-hmm. Housing and pedestrian corridor, and I love that. And you know, I mean, turning Woodside in that zone into a shared street, which means it's primarily pedestrian oriented, but residential vehicles for residents who live right there have access, but it's very limited vehicular access. It's pedestrian and bicycle. Great concept. And these are all concepts, but yeah, I really like that.
Well, let's talk about extending that. I think it was Hank Lewis's idea. I'm not sure about even extending that corridor to the other side of Deer Valley Drive. And he was talking about what, an underground parking garage?
That was an eye-opener. Yeah. Yeah,
Tell me about that.
A bridge that would go across Deer Valley Drive into the hillside. There would be a buried parking structure in the hillside with housing on top. And you would have a pedestrian access over Park Avenue into Miners Hospital area, which would be reconfigured also for a lot of different opportunities and flex uses and you know, community amenity zone, an improved community amenity zone. And then that would tie into that east-west corridor that would go all the way up to the base of Park City Mountain Resort. And Hank didn't take it from there. His responsibility was looking at the Miners Hospital zone, and he extended that across Park Avenue into the hillside of Deer Valley, which was kind of an eye-opener.
Deer Valley Drive is
Deer
what
Valley
you're saying.
Deer Valley Drive, yeah.
Okay.
Into the hillside across.
Got it. All right. The senior center, I mean, there were a couple of options for that, City Park, the library parking lot, a few other places. I mean,
yeah, there's a few options for everything, and the city center or the citizen center is a good example to use, but it's like affordable housing. You know, it's where do we put affordable housing in order to preserve green space? Where do we create new green space and put affordable housing on existing green space? The senior center could go in a number of locations. It's a priority. It's a critical component of this whole design, and there will be a senior center somewhere, but we have numerous options of where we put it.
Yeah. Also, some talk about building over the skateboard parking lot.
Yeah, the Moenie parking lot right across from the library. Yeah, that's a flat surface parking lot. And, you know, anytime you have a flat surface parking lot, there's lots of opportunities to either bury or put something on top. And we have that opportunity with all these parking lots on Sweet Alley, the flagpole lot, this lot right here. China Bridge is already a structure. We could put housing on top of that. So it's just that same concept. You know, it's a flat surface parking lot. Is that the best and highest use for that ground?
So we're talking residential units as opposed to more parking.
Exactly. They were talking about putting residential affordable housing on top of the existing parking, maybe creating a structure that would have more parking and then housing above.
All right. And no cost attached to this.
I mean, yeah. No cost. Kind of like Mountain Accord. Dream big, go out and, you know, create your preferred scenario, and then we'll kind of you know, take a look at it through the lens of cost and what becomes practical and viable.
Well, kind of what we're seeing with the school district.
And school district also, yeah.
But then they come with these plans and saying, oh, well, this is what the community wants. Well, it was like, well, this is what we said that would be, we're dreaming big, but now that we know what it costs, we wouldn't have said this.
We're not too aware that what the community wants. This was people who have expertise in this area coming up with concepts and being audacious and dreaming big without constraints. Now we take that to the community and we get the community input to say, this is what we want, this isn't what we want, we'd like this here, we'd like that there. Then we run it through the cost filter, or we do that simultaneous, actually, probably in conjunction, and we come up with things that are actually practical. But this is the very beginning. This is the tip of this process.
Mm-hmm. But the design studio group is...
They're done. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they were fabulous. I mean, they really enjoyed it, too.
So does the city then kind of take this presentation dog and pony show? I mean, do you go different places to...
Yeah, we'll do a work session next. And that's where the public will have the opportunity. And that date, I think, is set. It's sometime in August. I don't know exactly when. But it'll come back in work session. We'll do an hour on it with council. We'll walk through it with staff and get their input. We'll start to look at it from a budgeting standpoint. And we'll take a lot of public input then as to what components of this that they like. We talked about, could we cherry pick? Is there anything that if you get rid of it, you know, the whole thing implodes that's holding it all up? And it was that east-west connection. That is the critical component.
All right. Real quick, also discussed Old Town Recycling one more time. So what did you decide to do here?
We're going to have an ordinance, finally.
And that'll say what?
Not sure yet. It's being looked at again. We had some input from a citizen, and we've compared it to the initial ordinance that was proposed. But we're going to go back and take a new look at who has responsibility for labeling. And, you know, we need an ordinance. If we're going to do something with this, the place to start, and it doesn't cost anything to pass an ordinance, all the costs come in later. How do you enforce what? How do you get compliance? You know, those are costs that would need to be run through a budgeting process. If we want to label it with electronic chips, all the bins, we'd have to collect them, label them, you know, issue new bins, that kind of thing. That's cost. But right now, passing an ordinance, and we think the ordinance will say that the homeowner has responsibility to label, and they'll have a certain period of time. And if there are bins that aren't labeled at that end, at that deadline, they will be collected, and to get them back, you will be charged a fee.
Yeah. Well, we've talked about this before. I mean, it would have been a great summer job for a couple of kids. But maybe you need to reach out to the Boy Scouts. It could be Eagle Scout projects or something.
Liza Simpson, she volunteered to drive a truck with a trailer, and she actually volunteered Andy Bierman, and I said I would drive. Yeah, no, there's a lot of, it's weird because this is something that comes back in a cycle every 2 years, maybe a year and a half, twice. I've been on council for a year and a half, and this has been back twice. The first time we talked about it, I was shocked to find, and I didn't get it from the staff report, that we didn't have an ordinance. So we were talking about compliance, and we didn't even have an ordinance to comply with. Now at least we have an ordinance. Then we can talk about compliance.
Well, so the stick is going to work in this case, I guess, as opposed to the carrot.
I believe in this case there's going to have to be a bit of a stick.
Okay. Anything else?
I went to the, you've done a couple of stories on it, but just a comment about Jana and Gary Cole getting the Miles Radiman Award at the Chamber Bureau. You know, they exemplify what it means to be not just a resident, which we all are, but a citizen of Park City. And I would just, you know, I would offer to the rest of the residents of Park City and those who look to be citizens to look to the Coles as a wonderful inspiration and example of how to do that.
All right, Tim, hey, thanks for your time.
Thanks, Leslie.
It's Park City Council member Tim Henney. News time, 8:44.
This is Earl Foote, founder of Nexus IT, a proud sponsor of Cool Science Radio on KPCW. Nexus IT provides comprehensive cybersecurity solutions to help protect your business from hackers and today's internet-borne security threats. More information at nexusitc.net or at 435-487-9099.
With one of those rare glorious voices that just made for singing country music, according to American Songwriter, Easton Corbin delivers old school country to the St. Regis Big Stars Bright Nights Concert Series, July 23rd. Doors open at 5:30, show starts at 7 p.m. For tickets, call 655-3114. Brought to you by the not-for-profit Park City Institute, entertaining, educating, and illuminating since 1998, and a KPCW supporter.
Promontory, a multi-generational private community, is pleased to support KPCW. New cabins and home sites feature golf and ski views along with fully sponsored club membership. Daily tours are available, 333-CLUB or online at promontoryclub.com.
This is Nan Worrell from the People's Health Clinic on behalf of Vail Resort's Epic Promise, supporting KPCW. When local teachers said that kids were having a hard time learning because they couldn't see the chalkboard, Epic Promise helped us launch a new program that provides eye exams and glasses to children who can't afford them. Thank you, Vail Resort's Epic Promise, for the new vision program and helping local kids have a bright future.
It's 8:49 now. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. This is the Local News Hour on KPCW. The National Ability Center and Kimball Arts Center have teamed up to provide a summer camp to teach art to disabled youth. In the studio with details, Cassandra Lemon. She's the marketing and outreach coordinator for the National Ability Center, along with Amy McDonald. She's the education director with the Kimball Arts Center. Good morning, both of you.
Good morning. Good morning. Thanks for having us.
So who wants to start about and just tell us what the program is, who it's for?
I can speak on behalf of the National Ability Center. So we have a summer camp all summer, including Adventurers, Crusaders, Pathfinders, and then some sibling camps and Camp Giddyup. In that realm, we serve a variety of different diagnoses. Each camp speaks to that diagnosis. So Adventurers is for individuals on the autism spectrum, Crusaders for cognitive, and Pathfinders for physical. Then my favorite camp is Siblings Camp. So that's a camp where individuals can bring their sibling to camp and participate in all of our programming.
So do you have one camp then for each group or a couple of different camps for each of those groups?
Just for example, we have three camps going on this week. So each week there are tons of things going on and it's a booming, busy summer.
So who's teaching the classes?
So this is Amy. So the Kimball Art Center, we have art instructors that go over and work with the students during the camps. So each camp, each week, gets an art experience, and we specifically design what medium and what the experience will be to custom fit the needs of the constituencies. And this has been absolutely wonderful because all of our instructors, we've had, just to give a little bit of background, we did an adaptive training, all of our staff and instructors, with the National Ability Center to help educate us and to increase our awareness and to help us better serve the needs of the participants. And we also did an art training camp for the National Ability Center so that they can understand the art process and how to better serve the needs of the constituents. And what's resulted is a smashing success, I would say, is that the instructors come out glowing from the kind of experiences that they have. The NAC staff has been exceptional in terms of support and making sure that every individual is served and engaged. This is the first year that we've done this, and it was sort of the guinea pig project, and I would say we would definitely keep this going. And we've formed this partnership where we are serving any group that comes into the National Ability Center. The Kimball Art Center is prepared to offer an art experience. And this partnership has been so great for both of us, I think, because we both believe that how the programs and services that we offer empower and honor the dignity of every individual. And we both feel that all these ways of offering experiences are inclusive, they're non-threatening, they're confidence-building, and rewarding for all.
So what kind of art are they doing?
We've had clay, a lot of clay, and those that, for different mobility ranges, we have actually found very successful. We've had printmaking, we have mixed media, we have painting. I'm trying to think of some of the others. I think clay's been a huge favorite in the painting.
Huge. And just to speak to that, I, prior to being the marketing and outreach coordinator, was a reservations coordinator, so I dealt a lot with face-to-face contact with families. And being an adaptive recreation center, it's go, 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 very active. And then in these camps, when they get the time to relax and express themselves through art, it was quite magical. We have had children on the autism spectrum who do have some sensory issues or, you know, holdbacks, and they get in there and they're touching the clay, and it is to use the word magical would be an understatement, just because of the excitement and their feeling after it. It's quite cool, and we're very appreciative of the Kimball Arts Center for providing that.
So the classes take place at the National Ability Center then?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And is there a cost to it?
Well, you can speak to
it. I can speak. So each camp varies just depending on how long it is and so forth. So there is a fee. However, the National Ability Center does have a scholarship program. So that is quite important for people to know that no matter what the finance,
you can participate.
You can participate, and we can scholarship it.
So do you sign up for a series, or do you just sign up for one individual class?
You sign up for the camp. So they are day camps from 9 to 4. However, we're very accommodating. Some kids can only come for 2 days, and within that camp,
the class the art experience.
Exactly,
right?
They can have the art experience.
Or it's a week-long camp, and so if there was, on the off chance, like a request for 2 art experiences that week, we would provide it. So.
All right. So how do people register?
To register, discovernac.org. We have a register tab. It's bright orange on the top right corner. Click there. You can do it all online on the portal or call the National Ability Center.
All right. And the schedule is also online as well?
The schedule is not online. Once you do register for the class, you'll get a confirmation email, and then Andrea Thompson, our camps and custom group supervisor, sends you an email with a custom schedule. So each camp is geared towards different diagnoses, and that varies on the schedule. But always an art experience included, which is very exciting.
We have a sibling camp coming up next week. I think I'm really excited about that. So.
All right. But I mean, I guess people can see the different camps and
yes.
what the weeks are being offered
yes,
and things like
absolutely.
That. That's what I mean by schedule. Okay. All right. Real quick, you wanted to mention something about a project sanctuary?
Oh, there's so the National Ability Center, and probably Cassandra, you want to speak more to that. But so, as I said before, all of the programs and services that the NAC offers, we have been working with them to also provide art experiences. And, I mean, because of the NAC's outstanding reputation, a lot of the National Wounded Warrior Project comes here for week-long experiences or multi-day experiences. And we have been starting to provide art workshops for Wounded Warrior Projects and also Project Sanctuary, which are also for military families.
Correct. So a big thing of the National Ability Center is our partnership with the Wounded Warrior Project, the VA, Project Sanctuary. The list goes on and on. And they come in a groups department with a big group, but oftentimes they fall in love with our mission. And then now they can continue that experience in an art realm and go to the Kimball Art Center, which is very, very cool.
We offered a Wounded Warrior experience last winter, and I still tear up because it was so, so magical. Just the things that the warrior said and the experiences they had were incredible.
Okay. DiscoverNAC.org?
Yes, ma'am.
All right. Amy and Cassandra, thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
Thank you.
News Time, 8:56.
Morning News and the Local News Hour with Leslie Thatcher is provided by Park City Medical Center, Jan's Mountain Outfitters, Assemble Park City, Deer Valley Resort, and Promontory and the Promontory Foundation.